Hello and welcome to the Heresy Lodge. I am your host, Dylan Cooper, with our constant co-host over here,
Gavin Franklin.
And guys, we are here this week to preview Fear to Tread by, what's his name? James Swallow.
James Swallow did Flyle Eisenstein, Nemesis.
Yep. Nemesis. Ah.
Yeah. So, historically not amazing books on the list. Not like incredible books.
Yeah, not incredible. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I'm halfway through.
Yeah.
It's interesting so far.
Let's go ahead and touch on that point. Halfway through. What is going on with that?
Man, I've just been so busy lately. I've been... how I used to do is I would read during work, like when things were slow.
Oh, and you don't have slow times.
Well, it's not that I don't have slow times. It's I'm also studying for certification right now. Oh, so yeah. During my slow time at work, I'm studying for that. So like when I get done with work, I'm like, ugh, do I really want to read right now? No, I've been reading for 8 hours.
I get that. Like I was just telling you downstairs, I've taken a bit of a break because I was so far ahead. I'm like, okay, it's time to chill. Interesting beer?
Did you look at the label?
I did look at the label.
So, for those listening, today's beer was created by Iron Maiden.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. It's called Trooper. It's a premium British beer. It's pretty good.
That is a very interesting beer.
Yeah, the first sip I was like, what the? It's definitely different. I like it.
Yeah.
So, good job, Iron Maiden.
Yeah, it tastes very good. Is there is that the brewery?
I'm assuming it's the band.
Yes.
Because there was a brewery in Evansville called Iron Maidens, or something like that, and they actually, sued them for using their name, so they had to change their name.
Really?
Yeah. So I'm going to assume it's the real Iron Maiden. Well, yeah, I like this. It's a cool-looking can, too. I'll show that for our YouTubers. Pretty cool.
Yeah, this is interesting. It literally just says created by Iron Maiden Robinsons. I don't know.
I like it, though.
No further information will be distributed about the beer.
Yep, that's it. Guys, we will be doing our giveaway on our 1 year. It is in December. I should really say which day in December it is. I just have been too lazy to look. But that's happening in December sometime. To get in that, you can do that by interacting with good old Gavin and myself. You can do that by going on our Discord, which you can get that from our Twitter, which is pinned to the top. It is at Heresy Lodge. You can email us at theheresylodge@gmail.com. If you're on YouTube, leave us comments. You respond back, we'll add you to the list. Tell your friends. I don't know.
Anything? Family.
Yes, friends, family.
Loved ones.
Co-workers.
Grandparents, daughters.
They're definitely not part of the loved ones. No one likes their grandparents. No one likes their daughters.
Understood.
But that's all the fun stuff. Let's get into Fear to Tread.
So, it's finally arrived.
We finally have some Blood Angels. We haven't seen the Blood Angels since Horse Rising?
Yeah. It's the last time Blood Angels have graced us with their presence. And we hear so many... Technically, we saw Rautalorn. Is it Rautalorn?
I said Rautalorn.
Rautalorn?
Sure.
We saw Rautalorn and Prospero Burns at the Council of Nicaea.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
But very briefly. And in this book, we get to see all of them, every single Blood Angel you can possibly imagine. And where we last left Sanguinius and the Blood Angels, it was with Horus, with that alien group.
Yeah, the Dynasex?
Desporax? Desporax?
Maybe.
Yeah, something like that. The people that were like...
Yeah, they let Xenos peoples in... As well. There's normal people and also centaurs and shit.
Yeah, they were humans, but they rode centaur contraptions.
Yeah, and then would let other Xeno species join them.
Yes. And they were trying to convince Horus of their ways, and that's when Sanguinius gave Horus, he was like, you should start calling them the sons of Horus because you need to show your authority.
Yeah.
And he was like, it very much so talks a lot or speaks to how close Sanguinius and Horus were.
Mm.
That Sanguinius felt like Horus needed to be respected, and Sanguinius was prepared to respect him because that's what Daddy told him to do.
Yeah.
But also at the same time, like, they're close enough brothers that they can have that conversation. You see that in this book a couple times as well.
The thing is, too, like, Sanguinius and Horus, these are two people that make fucking sense to actually be close. Mm-hmm. Not like freaking Manus and Fulgrim. Like, mm-hmm. these two, like, make sense. Like, they're very similar. Yeah. There's a reason both should have been considered the top two dogs to be the War Master.
Yeah, and I actually think, in my personal opinion, I think their bond was closer than any other Primarch bond. Like, people say Ferus, Manus, and Fulgrim. But I think Sanguinius and Horus were probably the closest two brothers.
I feel like they actually have, like, a real relationship where, like, Manus and Fulgrim, like, they bonded over making weapons. Like, cool, I guess. But you're not going to have, like, a deep conversation with Ferus, Manus.
Yes, and the interactions you get between Horus and Sanguinius here, it's like they shared pretty deep moments in this book. And so it's cool to see it's not just the author saying, oh, yeah, they were really close. It's like showing you how close they were. And we haven't seen this yet with any of the Primarchs. We haven't seen them, like, really have these affectionate moments with each other. But this book,
it opens up with it, honestly, because, like, you have this big revelation of, well, the bloodthirst. We've talked about this before.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, Horus finds out the secret, and he's like, I will die with this secret.
Yes. So let's go ahead. Let's start off with some introductory to some of the characters, and then we can talk a little about, like, how the plot starts and how it kind of propels forward. And then we can talk about, like, certain concepts, I think, that you'll need to remember. So, obviously, we know Sanguinius. He's the Primarch of the Blood Angels. Horus Lupercal, Primarch of the Sons of Horus. I guess what's important to know about those characters, they're Primarchs, they're close brothers. We talked about this. Sanguinius has wings, obviously.
Yeah, he talks about the damn wings, like, every other page.
Yeah, he's considered the angel. You know, he's literally considered the angel. And a lot of times, the Blood Angels are compared to angels in this book many, many times. And it's really cool to see that kind of, I don't know, I feel like it's kind of slaps you in the face so many times, but it's like, they're angels. He has wings.
Yeah.
Do you get that analogy?
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, I get it. And then you have the Blood Angel characters. So we can kind of go through some of these. So the first person that I think is very important is character name Ascalon. Ascalon.
I said Ascalon in my head.
Yeah, same. It just kind of came out. So Ascalon, he's the leader of the Sanguinary Guard. So when I think of the Sanguinary Guard, I think of the Terminators, but they're not Terminators.
I think of them as all the other freaking things of like Fulgrim's Phoenician, whatever.
Phoenicians, yeah. Phoenicians.
Yeah, they're scrubs at the end of the day.
Yeah. Well, then you have the Death Guard ones, the Death Shroud.
Yeah, Death Shroud.
So in my mind, every time you see, like, a elite troop within some of the armies, I'm thinking that it's like a Terminator squad.
Yeah.
But that's not the case. What these guys actually are is they're more like a... They're very elite. You actually see that in this book. Like, they're pretty badass, especially Ascalon, I believe. But they're not the most elite. Like, there are definitely characters in here that I think are more badass. And then they also have these, like, packs, jetpacks, and they have golden wings.
Yeah.
So they're like mimics of their Primarch, essentially, and they're jumping around the battlefield. And they act more like shock troopers in my mind, right? They're like, they get there quickly and they get out quickly, kind of thing. But Ascalon, he's the leader of the Sanguinary Guard. So he is, like, one of the most important people in the Legion. It's hard to, like, say how important the Sanguinary Guard is because it's not like a ranking tier system. Like, they're kind of off to their side on their own thing.
Yeah.
And he's the leader of them. But obviously they spend the most time with Sanguinius out of any other Blood Angels because their job is to constantly guard him.
Yep.
Very similar to Death Shroud.
You know, it always makes me wonder, like, how much freaking guarding does a Primarch need?
Yeah. Here, I can see it being useful in, like, the heat of battle, right? Like, you're walking around and you're...
But how many, like, how many Astartes do you think equals a Primarch?
Oh, probably quite a few. But there is so it's an interesting conversation to have because it's like we saw in the first Heretic when Lorgar and Korax fought that like Lorgar had like a natural protection.
Yeah.
Like Korax had to hit him multiple times to actually hit him.
Korax had to really beat his ass.
Yeah. So you I think like Primarchs almost have this like psychic barrier around them.
Yeah.
That make them very immune to things like, because you think about, okay, maybe he's just a tall human. We'll just shoot him.
Yeah.
It makes him an easier target. But I think they're very immune to things like that.
Yeah, which honestly makes me hate Nemesis even more. That they thought they were going to kill Horus with a freaking sniper.
Yeah. Because it really doesn't make a lot of sense. Yeah. Now, they had to do some crazy shit with that weapon.
Right? Yeah, it's
true. It had to be a really insane rifle to make that work. And maybe, and that just speaks to the fact that, like, in the heat of battle, a Primarch isn't really vulnerable to those kind of attacks.
Yeah.
But I think a Primarch probably is vulnerable to getting surrounded.
Yeah.
Getting hit tons and tons of times, which is why they have these guards. But I also think it's a political thing.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And just having a guard, having people around you. Sanguinius in this book talks... It's very similar to Horus, where he has certain people that he keeps in his company very often.
Yeah.
That don't make a lot of sense, but they're there to provide him with feedback and their thoughts. Because Sanguinius believes that each of his sons, just like each of the Emperor's sons, has a trait of him. And he wants like those to be bounced off of him. So it's very similar to the Mourning Bull, but it's not really talked about. And also, kind of going off that as well, one of the other differences I would say between Horus and Sanguinius is the Blood Angels, they're very much so against the Lodges.
Yes.
So the Lodges don't have a huge bearing on this story. I like that too. Some other members of the Sanguinary Guard, it's Zeriel, Logos, Mendrion, Halcrian. Like, these are just names. Like, you'll see them. I think you see Zeriel a few times. He kind of pops up. But they're just members of the Sanguinary Guard. It'll tell you. It's not super confusing. I don't think the characters are too confusing in this book.
The only ones I keep mixing up is, like, Miros and... like starts with a C, I think. Here, let me see that real quick.
Yeah, go for it. Should have brought mine, but I did not.
Miros and Furio. I mix those two up all the time.
Okay.
And it's just because the O.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yeah.
That like, sense. I know, like, one's an apothecary. I'm like, damn, which one is it?
So, if I keep going down the list, I see that Raldoran is the next person.
Yeah.
Raldoran, he's the captain of the First Company. He's one of the most important characters. This character is... toted to be one of the best fighters in all of Warhammer 40K or Warhammer period. Unfortunately, I don't think you see a lot of that in this book. Like even in the end, you don't really see Raldoran like go crazy.
Yeah.
But he is very renowned and respected, and he is also Sanguinius's equerry.
Mm.
So Raldoran is around Sanguinius more than anybody, and Sanguinius really values his input on things.
Yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, Raldoran's, like, one of the only other Blood Angels that, like, know of the Bloodthirst.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I find, just incredibly interesting that, like, none of the other ones really know.
Right.
But I just think about, like, how much, like, they've had to, like, what they have to really do to keep that in check from all the other ones.
Yeah. I think... It's important to know, we'll talk about the Bloodthirst when we get to it, but it's a secret.
Yeah.
It's not like the Flesh Change.
No.
Because every Thousand Sun knows about the Flesh Change. The Bloodthirst is something that's hidden.
Yeah, completely. And I just find it like so like baffling that it's such a secret. Like no one's like ever noticed.
is very interesting. Like I said, Raldon is also, other than being Sanguinius' equerry, he's also the captain of the First Company. And in the First Company, you get various members. You have Orexis, Kano, Cador, Racine, and a Dreadnought. It's so these characters don't mean a lot except for Kano. Kano is a very important character. So the rest of the First Company are just kind of there. They'll pop up. They'll do some things.
Kano's the former librarian, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So Kano is in the First Company under Raldoran, so he's very close to Raldoran, but he also was previously a librarian. But now he has been stripped of his librarian status, and he's now just a regular foot soldier because of the Council of Nicaea.
Yep.
This is also a very common theme throughout the book, is like how the Council of Nicaea is affecting the legions and what is considered betraying the emperor, what the, you know, like there's this theme pops up again. And it seems like the Council of Nicaea, as we saw with the short story of the first.
Yeah.
And this story, it's really, and even Fear to Tread, Fear.
Yeah.
It's like putting all these loyalist legions in a really difficult position.
Mm-hmm. All of them, you have like the space wolves that are like, nah, we're not librarians, dude.
Yeah, like this would be so much easier if you just said you drew your power from somewhere else.
Yes. No, it's not from the warp. It's from my heart.
It's from our home planet. It's from Frenris. Of course. Ah, that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so this, the Council of Nicaea, I feel like there's so much that goes into it. And I can't wait till like after 50 books or maybe even after the siege, you know, like after we review the siege books, like we can sit down and talk about some key moments. I feel like we can, at the end of it, we'll be able to do a whole session about Council and Ikea to be like, what the fuck was up with that?
Yeah, for real.
It fucked over so much stuff, like a bunch of stuff. And it really pitted loyalists against loyalists in all kinds of crazy situations. And you see that in this character, Kano, in the book a lot. Then you have the captain of the Fifth Company, which is Amit. So Amit is really cool. His nickname is the Flesh Terror. So he's toted in the Blood Angels to be this fucking frenzy.
Yeah, crazy motherfucker.
Yeah. And, you know, you kind of think of that and you think that immediately makes you think of the Red Thirst.
Yeah.
And the Flesh Terror, you know, blah, blah, blah. And that kind of comes up a little bit with him because...
Wait, is he turning? No, that's just him. Okay.
Woo. Exactly. Because you think of, when you're reading this book, I think one of the things that I really enjoyed is as it progresses, you're kind of just sitting there waiting for someone to just fall to it. You know what I mean? So he's like definitely one of the characters that you're like, is this going to happen? Because it's like talked about a few times. So it's really cool. And Amit is a really interesting character. And he is one of what you would consider to be the Mourning Bull. So Ascalon, Raldoran, and Amit are considered what are like the Mourning Bull.
Yeah.
And Amit is very aggressive. He's supposed to be, he says his mind all the time. He doesn't give a shit. And there's scenes in this book where he says his mind is Sanguinius. And he's like, totally speaking the truth, but no one wants to like think about it. Yeah. And Amit just says it like he has no, there's no like moment in the paragraph where he's like, I'm going to regret this. No, like he's just like, hey, actually, I'm pretty sure this is what's happening. Everyone's like, dude, what the fuck? You can't say that stuff.
Like what?
Yeah. Like you see things with like demons, where like when they have to start facing like Horus's betrayal, it's like, oh yeah, these are demons. And they're like, no, we're pretty sure that it's just some Xeno stuff. He's like, this ain't no fucking Xeno shit. Are you crazy?
What alien looks like that?
Yeah.
Name then, one.
You know, they get to they have to face Horus's betrayal, you know. And he's like, yeah, I'm pretty sure Horus betrayed us. Everyone's like, no. And it's really funny to see, like, Amit, like, Sanguinius gets all pissed. And just starts, like, almost about to beat the shit out of Amit. And he's like, take it back. And Amit's like, no.
Look, he got us. He sent us here. This shit happened.
Yeah.
1 + 1 = 2, yeah. Dad.
That's what he's doing. And like, he does a really good job of it throughout the book. I really like his character. He reminds me a lot of a more aggressive Torgadon.
I love Torgadon.
Yeah.
R.I.P.
And then we have another company that appears a lot throughout this book, which is the Ninth Company. You have Furio, Cassiel, Maros, Sarga, Zagan, Lieto, and Cade. So the most important character in the Fifth, and arguably I would say the most important character in the book, is Maros. He is the apothecary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of it's like his POV.
Yes. In the book, the majority of the POV is from Maros, Raldalorn, and Kano, which is the psyker that we had talked about. But Maros is the apothecary. He had just recently experienced fighting Eldar, where he took down, a shitload of Eldar?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, so he took down like 9 Eldar or something along those lines. And the last one, speared him.
Yes.
And so he's injured. He has this, battlefield injury. And he's kind of, recovering from it. But he's, this badass apothecary.
He's a really badass.
He's got this chain axe.
Yeah, we haven't seen, a badass apothecary since, I want to say, Galaxy in Flames. There was, I think he might have been Death Guard, who was actually, fighting shit. And then, he was the one that Garo was going to, come back and, the save. He's like, nah. Go up there and go kill that guy. I'm going to just die.
Oh, I don't remember that one.
It's the only part I remember.
Okay. The other person I remember is Cade. He is the Tech Marine. Also a really cool Tech Marine.
Yeah, he's interesting.
Every time we see Tech Marines, it's this is cool. They do cool shit.
Mm-hmm.
They're always overriding systems and putting some cool shit on tanks.
This is like a little robot helicopter drone thing.
Yep.
I'm like, oh, that's fucking cool.
Always cool to read about Tech Marines. I wouldn't say he's super pivotal to the story.
Yeah,
The Tech Marine is always the character we're going to put some narrative wall in front of you. How do you fix it? The Tech Marine character walks up and well, let me do it for you.
It's that nerdy guy.
Yeah. Cassiel is the sergeant. You see Cassiel quite a few times. Kind of cool character, mm-hmm. not super relevant. All right. Now we move on to a large amount of names that I don't really know. We have Galen. Dar Nakir. Nakir pops up a few times. Meditus, Gravado, Navinus, Dion, Cleoton, Tagus.
I just met Garvato. He's kind of mocking the people that came back from the planet.
Yeah, so these characters, a large majority of them don't mean a lot. One of them, I can't remember which one, is another psyker.
I thought that was Zagan.
Is it Salvatore?
Maybe.
Or Reznor?
I literally just read the list of names that were former librarians last night.
Yeah. So a lot of the former librarians are there. They're mentioned. Nakir is a captain of the 24th company. You'll see him. He weighs in on things of Sanguinius's decisions a few times. So you can kind of go down the list of names, but I think once you reach the bottom, you see another very important character, which is Yasan Anilis, who is a warden.
Yes.
So wardens in the Blood Angel chapter or legion is they're like chaplains.
Yeah.
Very, very similar to chaplains, as you would see, he's like Namiel. So one of his jobs is upholding the Emperor's decrees and Sanguinius's decrees, meaning the Council of Nicaea.
Yep.
And that's what you see throughout this book.
He's almost stalking
Kano.
Yeah, Kano. And he's like, dude, fuck off.
Yeah. So like Kano's a psyker. He has a few urges throughout the book, which makes sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, he's in a really bad fight. He's like, if I just do this, it'll be okay, but I can't do it.
And you have Anellis just like constantly coming in and like questioning him. And it's really funny to see because you have like Rabalorn, who's the captain of Kano. He'll like come in and be like, dude, leave him the fuck alone.
Pretty much. He's like, dude, he's fine. Did he do it? Did you break it? Yeah. No. All right, let's go.
Yeah, get out of here. No problem. It's a interesting thing, but he actually, I think he gets a lot of redemption in the end too. The Warden. Okay. He's like kind of, he's a really, his story ends well, I think.
I just imagine looking at Kano, use the Force.
Yeah. And then, unbeknownst to me, I didn't know that they were going to be in this story. We move on from the Blood Angels and into the Space Wolves.
Yeah, we have some Space Wolves.
Yeah, we have a section of Space Wolves, a small contingent force, like 10 Space Wolves, join the Blood Angels. So their claim was they come like spiraling through the warp, like
very Space Wolves.
Yeah, they just like show up. They like go straight to the ship, and everyone's on like emergency. And like, what do we do? And like the Space Wolves are just been like, we're Space Wolves. So they know to stand down and do nothing until we board them, and then we tell them what to do because we're Space Wolves.
Yep, pretty much.
So they get onto the ship, and they basically inform everyone that they are there to
watch
from Malkador.
Yes.
Malkador had sent them to watch. We're here to watch. Space Wolves, they're really into it. But
Does that get explained later?
Yes.
Okay, because I've been very curious on like why Malkador like had an inkling to be like, let's just send some Space Wolves to go fuck with the Blood Angels.
No, it doesn't really explain why. So basically what I take from it is the Space Wolves are actually being like dogs.
Yeah.
Where Malkador, because the Emperor is absent, is sending them to all the legions.
Oh, interesting.
As like guard dogs. Like, tell us, because Malkador, I honestly believe, without the Emperor's guidance, Malkador has no idea who's bad or good.
Well, at this point, we don't even really know of this one, right?
Well, no. Sanguinius does not know of this
one. I know Sanguinius doesn't, but does Malkador?
No.
Because you think that if he did, and he sent the Space Wolves, they would be like, just an FYI, we should not follow Horus's order.
No, because there was obviously, at least when Malkador told the Space Wolves, and I think it's told that Malkador told Leman, and Leman told them. But they had no idea what this found. The reason they're there is because of Magnus. Like, when Magnus did what he did on Terra, that's when Malkador was like, send the police. All over the place just to look. It's almost like they went on and what's the word I'm looking for, like the president can put us in this state.
Weren't we just in one last year?
No, not a state of emergency. It's like when you can like use the military and invoke curfews.
Yeah. Did that not happen last year?
I think like, well, you can do it as a state of emergency. I'm talking there's a word for it.
It definitely happened in like,
we're like we go on like military lockdown. The president assumes absolute power.
Yeah,
and it's only in like the most insane extreme situations. I cannot think of the word.
Apparently, pandemic. I'm telling you, this happened.
This is very different because he can do stuff like military policing.
Yeah,
and he doesn't have to listen to Congress as much anymore. Like, there's a lot of additional things that happen.
Pretty sure this happened in China.
It's happening right now. It's never stopped.
I saw it outside.
Yeah. The Space Wolves are sent there. They're sent there because of Malkador, because they sent them out, and they're like, okay, we need to make sure all the legions are doing what they need to do.
Yeah.
It was never suggested that the Blood Angels were targeted specifically, and it wasn't suggested that it was because of the Red Thirst. I don't think anyone knows. I think Sanguinius has done a really good job of keeping under wraps. So the two characters that are important from the Space Wolves Legion is Red Knife, who is the captain, and Jonar Steel, which is a rune priest.
Yeah.
Not a psyker.
No, no. They're very different.
Not a psyker.
He'll tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, you cannot be using a witchcraft. He's like, I am not a witch.
I'm a rune priest.
Yeah. Dude, I do totally different shit.
That's okay. It makes sense now. As long as you're a rune priest and not a psyker.
Look, dude, I got like bones hanging off my beard.
So Steel interacts pretty consistently with Kano throughout the story. And there is a whole psyker story arc.
Yeah, I just started it.
Yeah. What's so funny to me is like the rune priests, they act like Nikea is like not a thing. Like they forced Nikea to happen. And then they were like, oh, we're not actually going to follow that. Like, we just wanted to everyone to hang out.
Fuck you, Magnus.
We just wanted to hang out for the weekend, guys. Like, that's all we wanted to do. Yeah, so that's the Space Wolves. They're there. They're kind of cool. The ending of their story is fucking crazy.
I'm excited.
Yeah. And then I love how there's this little section of the characters, and it says the Traitor Legions. So no one at this point... Sanguinius doesn't know about his fan.
Yep.
And we get the Traitor Legions we're introduced to. Well, we're not introduced to. There's Erebus.
Well, we have some like word bears.
Yeah.
Oh, my voice cracked there.
Word bears.
Word bears!
Erebus is in every fucking book. So Erebus is in this book, technically. Oh. Oh my god. The ending to this book has Erebus in it. Fucking phenomenal. Like the last, the end, not prequel, the epilogue.
Yeah.
Oh my god, the epilogue in
that was just
book.
Rauldron just like sawing him in half.
Oh, dude, it's great. It's great. Like the epilogue in this book, I was like, that was one of the most badass scenes from the entire Horus Heresy ever, and like it involves Erebus. Then you have Tanis Creed. So Creed, so I guess we can kind of jump into why the word bears are there. So not only do the Space Wolves show up, the chapter before the Space Wolves show up, the word bears show up.
It's just a whole family party.
Yeah. The word bears show up. Why did it say why the word bears showed up?
They are there because of Horus. Because Horus sent them to say like, oh, it's this Xeno species that you've seen before.
Yes, that's right. So basically when this book starts up, the Blood Angels are engaged in some sort of front. And when that's done, they're sitting there questioning, what do we do next? Horus sends the word bearers to tell them.
Yeah.
He's not using Astropass anymore because it's a top secret mission. And he uses the word bearers in a way to deliver this message. But the other reason the word bearers are there without Sanguinius knowing, of course, is to push their agenda.
Yeah, and to actually, like, communicate with Horus.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so they're there to kind of, like, make sure that the War Master's plans are playing, or is it the War Master's plans? Whose plans are the War Master's?
Yeah, because this one does, he does get pretty shitty in this book at one point.
Is it the War Master?
Is it Erebus?
Is it Wargar? Is it the Chaos Gods? Who fucking knows? Yeah. And then, so you have Creed, he's the Acolyte, so he's, like... I wouldn't say he's a psyker. It's just like a witch thing.
I think it's like, aren't like acolytes like psykers in training?
Mm-hmm. And then you have Uon Herox, who's just like the captain of the Word Bearers contingent that went with him. And then you have a scene at the end with Malagurst, and Fabius is also in this with the scene with Erebus in the beginning. Is it in the beginning?
Not the beginning, because I have not seen Fabius.
What's the scene? Was it in a different book where Erebus retrieves the Blood Angel from Fabius's laboratory?
Yeah, that's the short story.
Really? Which one?
I think it was in... It was the last one, I think, in Primarchs. Or maybe it was in Chalice of Treachery? I don't think it was in this book. It might have been.
Might have been in this book, because that's the scene I'm remembering.
Yes.
So at one point, Erebus goes to the Emperor's children during Isfahan 3.
Yeah.
And retrieves a blood angel that Fabius had actually taken from Murder.
Yes.
So if we remember all the way back to Horus Rising.
Yep, Horus Rising.
The very first book. The Sons of Horus were sent to aid the blood angels on the planet of Murder, only to find out that they were dead, and the Emperor... Well, sent to aid the Emperor's children.
Yeah, the Emperor's children.
Rescue the blood angels.
Yes.
So there's layer upon layers of rescue.
And Edelon went down there without any... assistance. No reason. Yeah, yeah, and then he got his ass kicked.
Yeah, so... one of those blood angels were recovered by the Emperor's children, and Fabius has him.
Mm-hmm.
And Erebus, at the beginning of this book, I'm pretty sure, retrieves him. That blood angel. And then we get to some Imperial personae here. So we have Athene Ducade. So Ducade is the shipmaster. Mm-hmm. She's the person in charge of the ship. The red tier, which is the ship for
the flagship.
Flagship, yeah, that's the flagship of the Blood Angels, which is where Sanguinius is.
Mm-hmm. And she's pretty well respected too.
Mm-hmm. You have Koro Sazi.
Yeah, that's it.
Astropath.
Sure.
Do you know that character?
I don't think they're around for very... Oh, wait, hold on. Yeah, she's the one that is brought by the Word Bearers.
Oh, yes, that's correct. So the Word Bearers bring an astropath to deliver the message.
Man, they just fuck her up, basically.
Yeah, some crazy shit happens. So she is... astropath that Horus is allowed to live.
Yeah.
But only if she serves him in weird ways.
And they're not sexual.
It's not sexual. It's a fucked up demonic way. So you get some really demonic stuff.
Might be sexual.
Who knows? Then you have Gerwin, who is a remembrancer. Mm-hmm. It's the only remembrancer we get, and we don't get a lot of them, unfortunately. Yeah,
I've liked what I have seen of him, though.
Yeah, he's a comic book artist,
mm-hmm.
which is really cool.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we don't see a lot of him.
Darn.
And his story is a little lackluster. That was the biggest flaw of this book, in my opinion. Didn't have a lot of flaws, but the biggest flaw in this book is... the reason it's not as good as Fulgrim, the reason it's not as good as even the first Heretic or Thousand Sons, you get very few human point of views.
Yeah. Human point of views are just so important for me.
They are. And they make you understand what this situation would be like for a human. Because when you read from the point of view of an Astartes, you're in a different mind space.
Yeah. It's nothing's killing me.
Exactly. When the person you're reading from the point of view as doesn't feel fear. You don't really feel fear.
Yeah. So, that's why I really liked Professor Byrne so much, because it was a human's point of view, and especially on that one planet where everything's just going to shit. He's just running, please, I don't want to die here.
Right. So it's really interesting that that's lacked in this book, and I think that's something it's so weird to think of someone that wrote Nemesis. didn't write any human point of views in this book, and I think this book would have benefited a lot from human point of views, because there's some fucked up shit that happens in this book. So I think it would have been really cool to read that from a human point of view.
Yeah.
So we have that. And then we have Tilian Niobe. Have you met Tilian Niobe?
Let me look at the name.
She's a gardener, technically.
I don't think so.
Okay. So... the location that this story takes place is on Cygnus Prime.
Is she in the container?
Yes, she's one of the...
They literally just opened it where I'm at.
Okay, so she is actually an assistant to the planetary governor whenever a bunch of shit starts going down Cygnus Prime, which we'll talk about here in a minute. And... she survives everything that happens before the Blood Angels show up. And then she actually is one of the very few citizens that gets rescued. And one of the very few citizens that survives the whole situation. So we don't get a lot from her point of view. There is a reason she survives.
She perpetual.
No.
Oh, okay.
The reason is not what I expected and also something I want to talk about because I feel like it's a bit of an inconsistency. She's a pariah.
Oh, okay.
But in a much weirder way.
What does that mean?
Like, it's not consistent. So, you know, like in the past when people are around pariahs.
Yeah, they like feel like sick and awkward. They feel
sick and freak the fuck out. People here around her feel calm.
Huh.
Yeah, I don't know why that is. I don't know if, like, one writer point of view of a pariah is they settle the warp, so it's like a calm state. And the other point of view is it's like they take all emotion out of the room and make you feel empty. But I don't know if it's like the both of them exist or if, like, the writers just got confused.
I mean, he also wrote the Sister of Silence book or a short story. And I feel like every time we have a Sister of Silence, and they're Nemesis.
Which had a pariah.
Yeah, and everyone was like, oh, God, ugh, I don't like you.
That's true. So I don't know why. Maybe both of them just exist, but in this story, this pariah had the effect of a calming effect.
I just want to go back to how we talked about how pariahs are supposed to be the super rare thing, and we keep running into them.
All the time. Well,
just like psychers.
So this is one of the things that I was okay with, because Cygnus Prime was a very large, there was like 5 planets that people lived on.
Yeah.
So it's not that crazy to me that one pariah existed.
Yeah, that's fair, I guess.
Yeah. So there we go. And then we have 2 unknowns. Kabanda.
It's my boy.
Kabanda's fucking sick. That's all I'll say about Kabanda.
It's about all I know now.
you'll figure it out. He is he's a demon. And so is Chris. No. Yes.
All right.
Chris is a demon. Okay. So those are the characters. Let's talk about some important points that you'll have to know about. We keep bringing up the Red Thirst. Mm. What is the Red Thirst?
I mean, it's just when the freaking Blood Angels just like, it's almost like they've just lost humanity, and all they just want to do is kill.
Yeah. So it's a genetic flaw that's inside of Sanguinius. It's very obvious, but it is talked about in the book that it was put there by the Chaos Gods, because we know at this point that the Chaos Gods have influenced the Primarchs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we learned that from First Heretic.
The genetic code and how they were raised.
Yep.
So that was a flaw that they established. And basically what happens is something is triggered in the Blood Angels. It's always during battle where they go into this like bloodthirsty massacre, and they'll kill anything and everything in their way. So it's a really interesting trait. There's a point in this book where the Blood Angels are like, they go into like a crazed fight.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the, it's very interesting. It's very different than the way other legions fight. It's not Raldovan is there and observing it, and he's talking about how like just chaotic it is. Like it's not an organized battle line anymore. It's not war. It's just like person like gets up and starts swinging an axe, killing as much as he can. And like at first, you know, the Blood Angels are on each other's side, but then when there's no more enemies, what happens?
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's like a. It's a really interesting thing. But this Red Thirst has been kept a secret from everybody, including a majority of the Blood Angels. So only a handful of people know about this.
Mm-hmm.
Sanguinius, Rattlehorn, Ascalian.
Sure.
The Sanguinary Guard Captain.
Yeah, I think that's how I say his name.
And at the beginning of the book, Horace finds out.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the beginning of the book, there's a little short story that's really badass.
Yeah, it was real cool.
About a time that Horus and Sanguinius, the Blood Angels, and at the time, the Luna Wolves fought together on the battlefield. And it was really fucking cool.
Yeah, and the species they were fighting seemed really interesting.
The Nephilim?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are they like a form of Tau or something?
No.
They seem like very like Tau-esque as being like mecha suits.
No, they're not mecha suits. They're organic. but they're, it's biblical. This book is very biblical. So the Nephilim, and it actually talks about in this book that they stole that name because they took on the name Nephilim because they knew that certain people would like worship them. So in the beginning of the book, they fight this Xeno species that feeds off of being worshipped. They like consume that energy. And they're just like giants. So in the Bible, the Nephilim are like fallen angels, or they're the descendants of fallen angels. So they're like giants. So like when you like David and Goliath, Goliath was considered a Nephilim.
Interesting.
So
there's your connection.
Yeah, I want to say that they're either the fallen angels themselves or the descendants of the fallen angels. So they were there. Yeah, it's like a biblical sense. And Sanguinius talks about that a little bit. But during this battle, one of the blood angels goes into the blood rage. Horus finds out about this and swears to keep it secret. The setup to the entire book is once Sanguinius and some of the blood angels leaves Horus' side at the end of Horus Rising, they actually meet up with the Alpha Legion.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah, of course. You got to have the Alpha Legion in a book somehow.
Alpha Legion have to be there to fight some orcs.
Mm-hmm.
And the Alpha Legion are doing some Alpha Legion shit.
Yep.
And it seems like, to me, looking back, they were purposely prolonging the fight.
Yeah.
Because the Blood Angels were held up there past Isfahan.
Yeah, they're there for like a year.
Mm-hmm. And once that engagement was done, the Alpha Legion left in Alpha Legion's fashion. Good old Irish goodbye.
Pretty much.
And that's when the Ward Bearers and the Space Wolf show up and the story kicks off. And the Ward Bearers let Sanguinius know that the Nephilim, who were supposedly hunted down to extinction by the Khan after the fight that they had at the beginning of the book, the Khan had failed and they had actually ended up in Cygnus Prime. And they're like destroying, or the Cygnus Cluster, because Cygnus Prime is the planet, but the Cygnus Cluster, and they're like taking over all the Imperial citizens there, their mines and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a lie, obviously. This entire thing was a trap.
Mm-hmm.
And
one thing about the Nephilim too is like they like I imagine like facehuggers like taking over like the humans.
Yeah, I don't know.
Or like the things from the new Suicide Squad, the little starfish.
Yeah,
that's what I'm imagining.
I don't know if like so what they do, these humans do, is they take out like dead skin from the Nephilim's like feet.
That's disgusting.
And they put that on their face.
Oh God.
Yeah. They wear it as like a
that's
mask.
The grossest thing I think I've ever heard.
It's really weird. They're like basically like mind controlled.
Yeah.
Once they get past a certain point. So that's who Sanguinius thinks he's going to fight. But actually what's happening is a couple chaos gods. And I actually mean a couple chaos gods have decided that this whole thing was going to be a trap.
I'm assuming Nurgle and Khorne?
No. Khorne and Slaanesh.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Really? Isn't Samus a Nurgle demon?
Samus isn't in this book.
He's mentioned.
When?
When the first demon appears. They say that they talk about how Samus sees why he likes Horus. Like, as I said, like he's like an underling of Samus.
No. I mean, I think what happens is, like, the trap is set by Chaos Undivided, but the greater demons present and, like, the characters present are from Slaanesh and Khorne.
I go see Slaanesh wanting some wings in her life.
Yeah. So there's a lot of back and forth. So what's actually happened is Erebus and Slaanesh are wanting to turn Sanguinius and the Blood Angels to use them. Horus doesn't want this because he's concerned. He's jealous of Sanguinius.
Yeah.
He's concerned if Sanguinius turns,
He'll be the favored one.
He would be the favored one of the Chaos Gods. So Horus buddies on over to Khorne and is like, wouldn't it just be more fun if we killed them? And then Khorne is like, yeah, it would be more fun. I feel
like Khorne would be like the one for Sanguinius. Like the whole blood thing and everything. That's like,
dude, yeah, it's
Khorne's like chosen child.
It's a big thing in this book, but here's the thing about Khorne is like, fighting is always more fun. And so
I don't care about him. Let's fight.
Khorne, you see throughout this book, has a plan, but it's more of just like, how can I incorporate massacres into the plan?
Yes.
Yeah, so Khorne is there, which is this is the first time that we get Khorne.
Yeah, we've had Nurgle and Slaanesh.
And now we have Khorne. Weirdly enough, we have not seen Tzeentch, which you think you would have already in A Thousand Sons of Prospero Burns.
Yeah.
You get a demon, but it doesn't seem like
actual Tzeentch.
Yeah. And you see a changer of ways in the short story with the lion short story.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a descendant of Tzeentch along with the pink horrors and stuff like that. But you don't actually hear Tzeentch's name. So we have three of the four Chaos Gods coming up already and being a thing. But Tzeentch is still nowhere to be seen, which is exactly how Tzeentch wants it. It's exactly what Tzeentch would do. So yeah, this whole thing was a trap. There's conflicting things. This side wants this. This side wants this. And it's very evident in this book that, like, the bad guys don't have their shit together. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they're still trying to figure stuff out. There's a lot of jealousy there. All the way to the end of this book, you kind of start to see them fall apart, which is cool. Because they seem like a powerhouse right now.
Yeah.
We cover the concept of the Bloodthirst. We cover the big players. Let's talk about the Council in IKEA a little bit.
Okay.
Council in IKEA is a difficult thing for a lot of the Loyalist Legions because what they're finding is they can use Psykers to combat these demons and save their lives.
Yep.
But it's considered wrong. We saw this in Prospero Burns, Deliverance Lost with Corvus Korax. We saw this in No Fear.
Mm-hmm.
We see this here in Fear to Tread. We saw it in the Lion short story.
Yep.
Like, this is a reoccurring theme of a lot of Loyalist Legions. And it's like, hey, I know Daddy said it's wrong,
but we could really use this right now.
Exactly. And then you have like people like the Space Wolves who just do it anyway. And they're the ones that are being sent to kill Magnus for doing it. And it's like, oh my gosh.
Dude, we don't do that.
What is this endless loop of ridiculousness? Which, and so in this book, you know, the Blood Angels face the same problem and the decisions they make are rather interesting. We just don't know enough about the Council in IKEA and like why the decision was made. Sanguinius is very much a Primarch that is like, let's trust that. Like, he knows what he's talking about. Let's not be stupid. Falls through the cracks a little bit here, but there, I think that's the mentality I would have.
Yeah.
Like, you see, but no one has that mentality, which is interesting to me. The only reason Rogel Dorn doesn't do Psykers because he doesn't like Psykers.
Yeah.
But he's probably the closest Primarch you have to like, Dad said no, so we're not going to do it.
Yeah.
I don't care if whoever dies.
I'm pretty sure he like locked away like his librarians.
It's actually suggested in this book that he did. Yeah.
That's because, fucked. Yeah, because they like talk about like, oh, at least Sanguinius didn't do to us like Rogel Dorn did to his.
Yeah, which is really crazy. Like, we hope that Rogel Dorn didn't do that. But he might.
To the dungeon!
Yeah. But I can't think of any other legion that has come to that crossroads and decided, let's not use Psykers, because Dad said so.
Yeah.
It doesn't exist. Rogel Dorn is the only one. Well, I mean,
yeah, like when your back's against the wall, why would you not use the weapon?
Well, what's interesting is about Rogel Dorn's character is his back is literally always against the wall. That is the concept of his character.
True.
He's really good at building walls.
Yeah. And another thing like about like Sanguinius's like Psyker ability is like he can like view like visions of the future.
Oh yeah, that's important to talk about.
sons, the librarians, all have the same dream. And they're like, well, that's a little weird that we all dreamt that.
So that's kind of the psychic story arc, and that's important to talk about. Each of the Primarchs, as we know, has some sort of psychic ability, and Sanguinius is, he has premonition.
Mm-hmm.
It's talked a lot about in this book that he kind of sees what's happening in the future. But what's important about Sanguinius, and this is talked about, is he sees a lot of possible futures. And he talks about how, like, yeah, this may come true, or it may not.
Yeah.
Let's not be slaves to it. I cannot wait to read about the Night Haunter, because the Night Haunter has premonitions just like Sanguinius. Both of them do. But the Night Haunter approaches it a completely different way. He's like, this is what happens. I'm, like, screwed. Like, I think the Night Haunter, the Night Haunter, when he's discovered by the Emperor, has a vision of his death. And that's how he, like, that's why he actually made a lot of the decisions he made, because he knew that it was coming, and that's he had to prepare for it. Where Sanguinius wouldn't approach it that way.
Yeah, well, I'm pretty sure Sanguinius also sees his death.
Yeah. But he doesn't approach it the way of permanence.
Yeah.
Like, I'm pretty sure Sanguinius actually had premonitions about what was happening on Cygnus Prime, along with the rest of his librarians. And he just was like, well, it may happen, it may not, let's see. And I think there was actually a situation in this book that, like, some of the visions that Kano has, not all of them come true.
Yeah.
Like, because of certain events, and because of, like, the apothecary, basically, I think, like, some of them come true, some of them don't. So it's interesting talking about premonitions in this book, like, how all that works. But yeah, that's another big thing. So we covered the Council on Ikea. We covered his powers. We covered the Red Thirst. Let's talk about Sanguinius as a character and a fighter. He's a badass.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen much of his fighting yet, other than the opening.
But it was really good in the opening.
Yeah.
And you see him at the end fighting, and it's really hard to deny, like, what he fights.
Yeah.
You're like, no one else could do that. No one has done it yet.
Mm-hmm.
Because you seem like the lion has taken on a changer of ways.
Mm-hmm.
You've seen, like, what else has people called? I think that was it. I think he's the only one.
Fulgrim fought the one demon that the Eldar summoned.
Yeah, Avatar Kane.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sanguinius fights, like, two things at once.
Fulgrim's a bitch. Watch this.
Yeah, Sanguinius does some really crazy shit, and it's really cool to see. I really think when people talk about Sanguinius, like, it's well-deserved how powerful he is. And at the end of the book, I'm very convinced that he deserves that top spot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think that's it for me. Anything else you want to cover?
I don't think so. I think it's a good spot without really spoiling anything.
Mm-hmm. Do you want me to give you my rankings of the book?
Yeah, give me your rankings. I'll give you mine next week.
Incredibly important, the Heresy. It's down 10. Importance. As far as rankings and enjoyment, it was a 9 out of 10. I'm gonna put it behind, it'll be number 4 for me.
Number 4, the so fourth, you have best. What, Fulgrim, Thousand Suns? Yeah, first Heretic, second. Yep. Thousand Suns.
Fear to Tread. And then No Fear.
Hmm.
Yep. It's really good book. Super excited to see the Blood Angels come out. Sanguinius was written really well. I did. There was a portion of this that I listened to the audiobook for, and Sanguinius sounds like a baby. It's really weird. He's like, no, why would you do this? I'm like, what is that? It's so terrible. But
other so audiobook that, not recommended.
I mean, everything else in the audiobook's great, but whenever Sanguinius talks, you're like, oh my god, dude. He kind of talks, you know, his voice cracks and everything, just like yours all the time.
It's got some big balls, I bet.
That's what it is.
They just haven't dropped yet.
Yep.
That's what I've been saying this whole time.
Yep. Ever since
they're going to drop. They're going to be so big. To my knees.
Anytime now. All right, guys, that is Fear to Tread.
Yes. Next week, we'll be back to review it. I'm looking really forward to it, finishing this book, and then starting the next one. Like we said at the beginning, we will be doing a giveaway on our 1 year in December. I'll get the real date next week.
Get a date going.
Yep. Like I said in the episode before, it will be a Games Workshop voucher. We have not determined the price yet, but we will. It'll probably be, you'll be able to get something decent. Mm-hmm. But you can do that by joining our Discord and talking to us. You can do that by going to our Twitter. It is pinned to the top at Heresy Lodge. You can email us at theheresylodge@gmail.com. You can also send us a message on the YouTube or comment, I guess. Yeah, so you don't send messages. Like, subscribe, do all the things. And we'll be back next week, guys. You guys have a good one.